Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We are beginning our program early today because WNYC has confirmed that Governor Spitzer is resigning from office after getting caught using a call girl service and amid questions about financial crimes that he may have committed in the process. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, our political director, is here. And Andrea, what do you know?
What I know is that two sources close to the governor have confirmed that Spitzer will be resigning probably this morning. We are not sure of the method yet, although he does not have to do anything publicly. This can all be done behind the scenes with paperwork.
The New York Post says that the governor and his wife had an agonizing night deciding whether to accept a plea bargain. Do you know if a plea bargain has been accepted?
I do not know about the specifics of the governor's legal case. I do know that it is very rare for prosecutors to bring cases based on structuring counts alone. Usually they're part of a wider corruption case, and they are used to show evidence that someone knows they're doing something wrong because they're trying to hide the money.
You use the word structuring. That's the nature of the crime, or the name of the crime that he would be charged with?
Right. It's been reported by the New York Times and the Associated Press that the governor the way that this case came to light was that the governor knew that the governor was trying to conceal money, and it came as a routine IRS investigation of bank transfers, in which a series of bank transfers and wire transfers are used to conceal where money is going and how much is being spent. That frequently happens when you have a criminal enterprise because somebody knows there are ill-gotten gains and they are trying to hide that. Less typically seen in a case where somebody is trying to hide something from his or her wife or, in this case, constituents.
Is there any misuse of public funds suggested?
So far, there have been no confirmed reports of misuse of public funds. One should point out that Elliot Spitzer is a wealthy man from a wealthy family. So if the allegations are proven true that he spent $80,000 on these services, he is somebody who would be in a financial position to do that.
What would the structuring have involved specifically? Do you know the amounts of money and what he would have done with them that would fall under this definition of structuring?
Well, the allegation is that they were transferred through a series of dummy corporations so that the source and final destination would not be linked, nor would the amounts. Now, this was obviously, as we now know, a very expensive service, $5,000 in the area of $5,000 per meeting. Spend more than $10,000, once you have a bank transfer involving more than $10,000, that would trigger the bank to report that information to the federal government. And as we know from the sworn statement that was released in connection with the prostitution ring case, the Client 9 sworn statement, there was talk of his putting money on deposit. The amount of money he would have put on deposit would not have triggered the $10,000 limit that would have required federal reporting.
Now, when you say structuring is a charge that is rarely brought against people not involved with some kind of organized crime or official corruption, some people are suggesting, like the columnist Jim Sleeper, who we may have on shortly, also Alan Dershowitz yesterday, that there is a political aspect to this, that the Bush Justice Department has decided to spend its time and the taxpayers' money looking into Elliot Spitzer because he is a powerful Democrat in a way that they would not look into any ordinary American for moving money around in such a way as to deceive his wife to conceal use of prostitution.
Well, that may be true, and I think that one of the things we're trying to find out now is if anybody has gone to jail for the structuring account amount alone. The statutory mandatory sentencing limit, not mandatory, but the statutory sentencing limit is 5 years, which is not high as federal corruption cases go. So whether he would face any jail time is still an open question. I think the more pressing question that the governor was facing was whether he could continue to govern the state of New York. And when I was speaking to people on Monday, right after his announcement, I said to them, why wouldn't he just announce his resignation right away? And one of the things that they said is, well, he's going to gauge the reaction. He has had no public statements of support from Democrats, no rallies, no press conferences saying he should hang in there, we love him, we want him to stay. And in fact, he's had quite the opposite. He's had several Democrats say publicly that he should resign, and quite a few more than that say privately. These Democrats, like the Lieutenant Governor David Patterson, he has more of a sort of collegial relationship than does Eliot Spitzer. And for a governor to have come in with 70% of the vote and to have so few friends left after, 14, 13 months in office is a testament to perhaps the things that Eliot Spitzer has not done right. But having now been through this for almost 48 hours and seen that he hasn't had a rallying of support and that, in fact, the sentiment is that government cannot go forward unless he resigns, I think that that also had to be part of his decision.
If you're just joining us, this is an early edition of the Brian Lehrer Show, because WNYC is confirming that Governor Spitzer has decided to resign and is expected to announce that today, maybe shortly. Our political director, Andrea Bernstein, is with us, and also joining us now, NPR international business correspondent Adam Davidson, who knows more about structuring and these kinds of issues. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brian. Thank you.
What do you know?
Well, here's when when you said that there certainly are these ideas that, oh, the Bush administration is singling him out or really going after him, and who knows, maybe there are people there who are doing that, but my reporting has shown that the person most responsible for the mechanisms that are now going after Eliot Spitzer is Eliot Spitzer. That in 2001, Eliot Spitzer, as New York Attorney General, insisted that many of the leading banks in New York have these very comprehensive risk assessment software programs, incredibly complicated software that every bank now has, and no banks had in 2000, all of them have it now, that is constantly monitoring every single transaction that every single one of their customers does for any suspicious activity.
This is a result of 9/11 and trying to track the movement of funds that support terrorist activities?
9/11 and the Patriot Act told banks to be more careful about scrutinizing funds for terrorist activity, exactly. But the biggest push in 2001 was from the New York Attorney General's office. This is when Eliot Spitzer was going very aggressively after investment banks and others for giving sweetheart deals to their favored brokerage clients, that kind of thing. And he said that it is no longer acceptable for a bank to say, well, we didn't know. It's just, you know, how could we know? He said, the software exists, the programs exist. You need to have those resources if you are going to say you are doing due diligence.
So since Spitzer's own transactions apparently didn't rise to that automatic trigger level of $10,000, how would the banks have gotten suspicious of his money transfers in the first place?
Like you, I thought $10,000 was the magic number. And the law is, over $10,000, they have to report it to the IRS and to the government. But what these software programs do is they bundle every tiny transaction. Let's say you go downstairs and you use your ATM card to buy coffee and a bagel for $5. There is a software program, if you use your ATM card, your debit card, there's a software program at your bank that is aware that you did that. Now, what they're going to look at and see is Brian Lehrer suddenly getting coffee and a bagel, $5 purchases, at thousands of delis around town this week? Because that's the sort of thing a money launderer might do or a terrorist financier might do. They might use thousands of mini transactions to transfer money across the country or across the globe and try and hide it in this normal flow of commerce. And so these software programs, the software programs that Elliot Spitzer demanded banks have, are very good at adding up these sums. Before 9/11, before 2001, it was left to individuals, people looking at pieces of paper. And there was no way one guy looking at the, you know, paper records of Bank of America is going to uncover thousands of $5 transactions. Now it's done trivially. It's done very easily. Now, that activity of disguising your money into many smaller transactions is, as Andrea said, that is this thing called structuring. It's a crime in and of itself, but like Andrea said, it's usually not prosecuted unless it's part of some other crime that is occurring.
Also joining us now is longtime New York columnist Jim Sleeper. These days he blogs for Talking Points Memo. He had raised the question in a post yesterday about what questions federal prosecutors would have to answer in addition to those that Elliot Spitzer would have to answer. Jim, you're on WNYC with us. Good morning.
Hi, Brian.
Are you satisfied from what you've been hearing from Adam Davidson and others that serious enough crimes have taken place to warrant Elliot Spitzer's resignation, as we have now been confirming that he will announce this morning? Or do you still think that there may be some misuse of power, maybe even misuse of taxpayer funds, which is what I think your column suggested, on the part of the Justice Department for investigating Elliot Spitzer?
Well, you know, Brian, I see it both ways. Spitzer has hoisted himself on his own petard. I don't see a way out for him. In the world of perceptions and ethically and morally, I think he's cooked his own goose. But that doesn't mean that the prosecutors are guiltless in this matter. In the first place, you know, restructuring is a crime. Leaking is a crime. And we're not sure yet how the New York Times itself became aware of this. We've had narratives about how the Feds became aware of it through a supposedly routine IRS check. I can accept that. But by the time this thing came to the point of a wiretap, a dozen assistant U.S. attorneys, FBI agents, IRS agents all knew about it, and somebody decided to go beyond what they should have done. So that's point number one. Point number two, I honestly think in Spitzer's situation, the stupidity of what he did sort of outweighs the actual substance of what he did legally. I'm not approving at all of prostitution, incidentally. I don't think it's a victimless crime. I think he really, what he did morally and ethically, is crazy as well as wrong, given the positions he's taken in the past. But the fact is, what the feds really have on him, the aspects of the Mann Act that they almost never enforce against the men and would look like they were involved in selective prosecution if they were enforcing against him, the restructuring issue, which is potentially real, it doesn't amount to as much as I think the incredulity we all feel that he, as a former prosecutor, wouldn't know what traps he was walking into. One more point, if I could say. I mean, look, I think that what he really neglected is that when you patronize a high-priced ring like this, you are very potentially and very likely abetting organized crime and, you know, racketeering of some kind. And you're subjecting yourself to blackmail. Now, the fact that you may be doing that doesn't make you a criminal necessarily, but it certainly does put him in an impossible position as a good judge of public affairs.
Adam Davidson, any last thought from you? Any reaction to what Jim Sleeper said before we let you both go?
I agree with almost everything he said. I mean, I think that just on a personal level, I don't know if they should prosecute him or not, but if anyone in the world should have understood that, leaving aside the moral, ethical, and legal issues, the pragmatic issue that he was likely to be caught, he should have known that. He should have known that more than any single person alive today. And that really brings up very troubling questions about his judgment. I mean, frankly, about his sanity.
NPR international business correspondent Adam Davidson, columnist Jim Sleeper, blogging with Talking Points Memo. Thank you both very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And listeners, if you are just joining us, WNYC has confirmed that Governor Spitzer will resign. Our political director, Andrea Bernstein, is in the studio with us. And Andrea, do we have any idea at what time the governor will come forward publicly?
The information that I'm being told is that it will be around 11 this morning that we will know whether it's a specific, whether it's a public announcement by the governor or paperwork that's been filed. We're not sure. I should say that the governor's press office has not confirmed this information, and Lieutenant Governor David Patterson has just issued an advisory just a few moments ago that says he's in Albany with no public schedule. So this is not official from the governor's office, but it is from high place sources close to the governor that are in a position to know.
The New York Post says Lieutenant Governor Patterson has asked for the governor to hold off on his actual departure until Monday to allow him time to organize his transition. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, I haven't heard that, but that is consistent with what I've been hearing from people close to the lieutenant governor, that obviously it usually takes quite a long time to prepare a transition team, and there are obviously lots of people that would stay in the Spitzer administration, but the governor usually brings in a whole group of top aides and advisors, and Patterson doesn't have nearly a staff that size, and there's been a lot of quiet phone calling in the last perhaps 40 hours about who would be part of the Patterson staff, who would stay on in a Patterson administration. So there have been those discussions going on, and it takes a long time to put together a governor's office, so it wouldn't be surprising if Patterson wanted to wait to make this official. But I have not confirmed that, and I don't know that. All I do know is that Patterson is setting up or has been preparing for a transition in the eventuality that that would happen. Now, Patterson has been very mum about this because obviously he doesn't want to be seen as preying on the governor's ill fortune and sort of leaping in. Even though I think the last few days the relationship has been strained and quiet, and there have been some rough points, in general, David Patterson and Elliot Spitzer do seem to have a collegial bond, and the Spitzer administration, from the moment that he selected David Patterson as his running mate, has encouraged Patterson to have his own operation, his own team, and his own high profile. That's a departure, for example, from the way that Governor Pataki wanted his lieutenant governors to be, and one might argue also Governor Cuomo.
Village Voice political columnist and investigative reporter Wayne Barrett also joins us now. Wayne, welcome to WNYC today.
Hi, Brian, and hi, Andrea.
Can you believe this is taking place?
It's a shocker. It's almost, you know, it has the abrupt certitude of an assassination, because I think it just happened so quickly, and I think the change will be so total. I can't imagine two people that are more dissimilar in terms of their personality than David Patterson and Elliot Spitzer. One is is a guy who drives the train, and really has sparked such controversy. And, you know, I've been one of his supporters, Brian. You and I have talked about this many times.
That's right.
I think he had a fairly remarkable first year, and I saw an awful lot of positives in it, because he was willing to shake up everything that happened in Albany, just as he was willing to shake up everything that happened on Wall Street when he was AG. You would think that if you're going to make enemies in every nook and cranny of the public life of New York, that you would be a little more protective about your back. But this is a man who was just as aggressive, apparently, in his personal life as he was in his public life.
And Andrea Bernstein, really, that's an important point, that this is a political moment more than it is a legal moment, because we heard Jim Sleeper before go over the nuances of these laws and how they're not usually even enforced, and prosecutions are not usually mounted on the basis of what we know of this kind of structuring and this kind of use of prostitutes. But in terms of Governor Spitzer's ability to stay in office, it is a political more than a legal moment, largely because of all the enemies he's made along the way, correct?
Yes, I think so. And I mean, one of the sort of ironies, and this is the ironies, just keep piling on. But as Attorney General, Spitzer did make it one of the hallmarks of his prosecutions that he would ask people or encourage people to step down as heads of corporations when he brought prosecutions. Now, I know that...
And have them step down sometimes to avoid prosecution.
Or to minimize fines. I mean, I think the argument was that this would sort of... that the corporations would argue that it would protect the corporation if this individual who was charged of committing a crime was no longer part of the corporation. It is a more delicate matter to ask somebody to step down, obviously, when they have been selected by the public versus a corporate board. But having done this, he sort of, you know, as he does in so many aspects of this case, opens himself up to charges of, you know, you pushed so many people out, why shouldn't you be pushed out? And, you know,
he did it to Alan Hevesy.
It's sort of like...
He did it to a publicly elected official who just won a statewide election.
It's, you know, in a very recent case, and just last spring, when you know, there was a selection of who Hevesy's replacement would be, and the Assembly revolted and chose their own candidate over Spitzer's choice. He went and into the districts of two Democrats and openly lambasted them. This is not the kind of things that makes you friends in Albany, which is not to say that you should do things the way they've always been done, but his lack of finesse seems to be one of the reasons for the deafening silence at this point.
He just pushed through, Brian, a sex trafficking bill in which he was the person who was advocating stronger penalties against the Johns. And he pushed through the state legislature in 2007.
Really? He did that as governor, not as the attorney general.
Right.
Also joining us now is WNYC's Arun Venugopal, who's outside the governor's home at 985 Fifth Avenue. Arun, I assume it's a media madhouse over there.
Yeah, it's more of the same as it was yesterday, but in the last few minutes you've definitely had this sense of imminence that something is about to happen. Of course, everybody has the same reports that the governor might announce his resignation any moment now, and that hopefully, you know, there's some wishful thinking, of course, here, but that he might come outside and just, you know, come hold forth to the media gaggle.
Do you expect just a statement? Do you expect a news conference in which he would take questions? Do you have any idea?
No, we're all pretty much in the dark here. There's just, you know, people keep on rushing back and forth between the sidewalk here. It's just like this madhouse of wires and cameras and still photographers huddled together, shivering out here in the cold. And you have this sort of a forest of transmission towers on top of these TV network trucks, and people just waiting any minute now for something to happen. But I think there's also that sense that, you know, why would he possibly come out here and, you know, do anything like this? I would assume from the secrecy that's been happening over the last 36 hours or so that it's not going to be quite as public as the media might like.
WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, would you expect Governor Spitzer to take any questions from the media or just to announce, like he did in his one-minute apology without getting specific 2 days ago now, that he is resigning and walk back away? Or maybe not even that, maybe just a written statement?
Well, if the lawyers have taken hold, which is my guess that he's probably thinking about his personal future now as well as the future of New York State, he will not stand and answer questions from a gaggle of reporters because he wouldn't want to say something that could potentially be used against him in a legal case. So I'm going to guess that he would not stand out and take questions. However, 2 days ago, on Monday during your show, I wouldn't have guessed any of this. And Wayne, I don't know if you feel this, but Wayne, you are perhaps the top sniffer out of politicians with problems. It's something both you and I are trained to do, and I was taken surprised by this. I don't know if you were as shocked as all of New York.
Well, you know, as a reporter, we all hear rumors about public officials' sex lives. And I know people who are dear friends of mine who worked in Elliot Spitzer's office for most of the years that he was there as AG, and who had no idea that he had any sort of an extracurricular sex life, much less that he was someone who regularly visited prostitutes. Frankly, you know, the New York Post is probably the least reliable source, and they now say that he's had this going back 10 years. I'm not going to traffic in that because I think that's post-rumor. What we do know, and I think we know it fairly reliably, is that he certainly had a pattern of this conduct in 2007. Whether or not it preceded that, I think, is very much up in the air. But I certainly had no indication. And it is something I snooped around and talked and asked people questions about. In fact, in the last few days, have called people that knew him very, very well, and I don't think anybody had a sense of this. It was a dark side that nobody saw.
Were you surprised, as was I, that the U.S. Attorney's Office was looking at this since last summer, and that nothing leaked between then and now?
No, I'm not surprised about that. I will tell you one thing, and I find the pattern of the Justice Department in the handling of this case to be abhorrent. I think it raises all kinds of questions. I've just listened to the commentary from Jim Sleeper, and I agree with everything he said, and I'd add a few things. I mean, they just renewed the wire on February 21st on one of these phones, and they brought down the case within days of that. So this was a case targeting a single individual. Why would you rush the wire down? I've never seen an investigation like this in which they brought the wires down so quickly.
What would that mean?
They got what they wanted. They didn't want to get too many more of these rich guys walking in and talking on their wires. Whatever the reasons are, I'm speculating. I don't know what the reasons are. I know that this is contrary to the ordinary practice. You extend wires. You don't bring down the wire when you have authorization for 30 days and you bring it, and the wire was just renewed on February 21st and you bring down the case in early March. That is very strange. It's inconsistent with the pattern of these kinds of things. And this case smacks of a case that had a single target and that was not involved in going after any of the broader issues or questions here. But
in your opinion, a case that is improper in any way? You heard Adam Davidson before say that there's really one person to blame this on, and that is Elliot Spitzer, because not only was he responsible for some of these laws and practices, he certainly knew well what they were and then went ahead and flaunted them in such a way that would come to people's attention.
Well, I thought the most telling point that Jim made, and he made several telling points, was that, you know, this is a mob prosecutor. He made his bones by going after Tommy and Joey Gambino. And for him to be doing business with an organization that probably has some mob associations, it's deplorable conduct. It's deplorable. This doesn't in any way change my view that had this been a Republican governor, a powerful, high-profile Republican governor, and had this Justice Department and had this unit, I'm talking about the particular public corruption units of the Justice Department and the Bush administration, had they had the same information that we have a record of 6-1 Democratic prosecutions under the Bush administration over Republican prosecutions. The record speaks for itself, and I have grave questions about whether or not they would have done the same thing had this person been a Republican engaged in similar activity.
This is WNYC FM and AM New York and WNYC.org. We are confirming that Governor Spitzer is going to resign from office. And now the AP is reporting that Governor Spitzer will resign effective Monday, completing this stunning fall from power. Effective Monday, and just as Lieutenant Governor Patterson was requesting, according to the New York Post report that we cited earlier, this five-day period for a transition to take place. When we continue, we'll talk much more about the man who will apparently now be governor, David Patterson. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.